Hi there, I'm Sonia Morton Firth, and today you're tuned in to the Sonia Morton Firth Show. I have enormous pleasure in welcoming my guest, Margaret Aberdeen. Margaret has survived horrific domestic abuse, but not only that, she's beaten a brain tumour, meningitis, and cancer of the kidneys. Today, Margaret stands on stage and helps others in their fight against domestic violence. Margaret's written a book, her energy and passion is absolutely amazing. Margaret, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's a great, great pleasure to be on your show, Sonia. Looking forward to it, you know, this morning coming down to all the traffic and things like that on the tube, you know. I just kept my mind centered, I'll get there. The end result is fantastic when you have that passion and that determination to be where you are today. And I'm absolutely fantastic being here. Thank you.
Well, to that point, Margaret, your passion and your energy, when we met a few months ago, literally you bowled me over with your energy and your enthusiasm. And this courageous energy that I really hope the audience can feel. So I'm feeling it very much here. Margaret, where did your courageous energy come from?
Now, a lot of people have asked me this question, but I think really and truly it all stems from within. I remember at a very, very young age, I came from a domestic violence environment. My family, my father was an alcoholic and used to abuse my mom, I mean, endlessly. Mm. And how many times I witnessed that. So I think seeing all of that as a child, something grew in me. I said, a seed was planted. Let's start with a seed. A seed was planted in me to say, okay, I'm seeing all that, but there is some way I'm going to overcome it. So I think that sort of way, you know, sometimes people can have all this emotional, but we can turn emotions into energy. Instead of going in downhill, we can say, you know something, I am not going to go through that as I'm growing. So there was something that was festering me, and wow, did it fester in me. And I just feel so energetic and so determined. I just want to help people. It all comes from my heart and my soul.
And that determination really comes across. So tell me a little bit more about your childhood. You mentioned abuse. What did you go through
in your childhood? It was mostly emotional as a child. It was six of us, one boy and five girls. And my father, as I mentioned earlier, was an alcoholic. And when he came, we used to beat my mom. And so many times, Sonia, I saw my mom being slapped so many times, you know, never saw any sort of smiling, loving thing. So, you know, you can imagine growing up in that sort of, you know, area. It really can be very, very difficult for a child. I mean, really and truly, you know, it's scarred for life. I am scarred for life with all that emotion. One of my sister's killed herself, you know, so it was a very sad thing.
And how old were you when your sister killed herself?
Well, I was in my 20s. I was over here. She was, because we all moved to America. I'm originally from Aruba, but I grew up in Venezuela and Trinidad and then New York City. So it was while I was living here, my sister, she was about 21 or something like that. She threw herself from a roof building onto 8 stories onto the sidewalk.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so there was something from her childhood. This is what people don't understand. There is something there scarred, and you can carry it until you don't, you know, if you have to deal with it.
And what did you do at that point when you know, your sister killed herself? How did you feel? Did you feel like this is a family I want to stay in, or did you feel scared? Or,
well, as I said, I was over here. Mm. I spoke to her 4 hours before she did that. My mother did call me from New York and said there was something wrong with her, and I spoke to her. But, you know, I couldn't do anything because I'm over here. So it was a very sad feeling, you know, that my sister took her life at such an early age. But, you know, let's go back to my childhood. One of the most painful parts that I remember, I have to close my eyes sometimes because I think my subconscious mind is protecting me because I don't remember the after effects, is when I saw my father hit my mother with a brass lamp pole on her head. At a very young age, I may have been about 8 or so. And I can't remember the afterwards. You know, my elder sister and I, we spoke about it a few years ago, and she herself, she said she can't remember. Because sometimes I think when something is so awful, so hard, our subconscious mind, it protects us.
Absolutely. Your brain just shuts down as though something didn't happen.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, life goes on.
And life did go on, but it didn't sound like it got much better for you. So when you got to England, what happened after that?
Yes, well, I met my ex-husband. This is the reason why I'm over here. because I had, you know, I never thought of coming to London, England. It wasn't in my dreams or nothing like that. I met my ex-husband, an English gentleman, in New York City. We got married, and that's how I came over here. It was a lovely relationship for 10 years. But there, again, it was an emotional, you know, manipulation. I was like all to him. A very possessive man, but I have no regrets because I have got a beautiful son.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes, and that's one part of my life I really cherish. I really found some, you know, some happiness. And you know something too, Sonia, what I found? I found these beautiful gifts that I did not know I inherited as a child. I'm a creative writer, you know, I'm a natural speaker, as you hear the words just flowing.
Absolutely, I can feel it and feel the energy in your power.
Yes, yes, because you see, when you're in a childhood environment of domestic abuse, what happened? The child doesn't really have that time to find yourself. There is no nurturing, there's no loving. Mm-hmm. So I'm coming over here with my sons, my ex-husband, and I found all these beautiful things in me that I, you know, I've always had as a child, but I didn't have time or, you know, to find it because of all the emotional abuse and things like that. But anyhow, let's get back to that stage of, yes, you know, my teenage now, you know, getting married, coming over here, really living a lovely life. I really enjoyed it and traveled all over the place, etc. But 10 years later, I had my son, and 2 years later, the marriage broke down.
And at this point, and anywhere in this marriage, had your ex-husband shown you any violence or abuse or...
As I said, there is so many different types of abuse. There is emotional, you know, there is isolation, all these sort of things. So in a way, it was manipulation. He was a lovely man in a way, but very, you know, possessive with me. And I thought, you know, a lot of young girls with a Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Happily Ever After, the Prince Charming, you know. We get so wrapped up in those sort of fantasies or myths, as one would call.
Fantasy is a very, very good word for that.
That is what, yes. I thought it was a Happily Ever After. But, you know, as I said, the glass slippers crack after having the child. I fell off the horse and there was no one to pick up, you know, the pieces or pick me up. So I had to do it all by myself. But it was more emotional abuse because all his friends and things was my friends, and once the relationship broke down, I was by myself. There was no one there to help me. So I was a single divorced mom, working about 3 jobs. I was a fashion journalist.
I can definitely see the fashion side in you, Margaret. You look amazing.
Oh, thank you very much. It's just a natural. I brought all my colors from the Caribbean. I refuse to leave them there. You know, there is no way I'm coming from such colorful islands and leaving all these colors I remember. Yeah, so... in due course, I'm there with my son as a single mother, working these all these jobs. I had like 2 jobs, fashion journalist, freelance journalist, working in-house publishing and being a mother. And let me tell you something, being a mother is a profession. Whether people want to believe it or not, it is a profession. And this is something with the book I've written, trying to help people to realize being a mother is a profession. It's not just someone staying
home. I've got to say, I'm not a mother myself, but I absolutely admire all of those women out there that have had children that are bringing them up because it's a great responsibility. So I absolutely agree with you there when you say it's a profession.
Very much so. So that's what I was doing. I bought my own property myself, giving my son everything I did not have as a child.
So Margaret, tell me, you're a single woman on your own, bringing up your son. At any point did you want to meet somebody else? Did anyone else come into your life?
Well, as I said, for the past few, you know, years, I was just focusing on my son. Mm. Everything was with my son. And then eventually, as I said, I started having these seizures, really starting feeling depressed, isolated. I needed help. My son is getting older. And I did make an attempt to go back and live in America. I put my house for rent, and I went back to America, put my son in boarding school before, you know, going there. And so let me just go back and see if I can rekindle my relationship and my family, because that's where my family is and some friends that I've, you know, I grew up with, etc. So that was my time, which I did go. I stayed there for 6 months, but I just felt empty. I was missing my son so much because we were very close.
Yeah, of course,
you know. So and I came back here, you know, sort of going downhill. And at that time, I called him a Prince Charming walking into my life.
Okay.
I called him Prince Charming. Yes.
Okay. And sounds lovely.
Well, you know, I'm going back to that fairy tale myth.
Yes.
Prince Charming was really lovely man, very caring and spiritual, religion and everything like that. And he came into my life. And I think what happened to me there, I was very vulnerable, very depressed, and not seeing that whatever his intention was, I did not see it. I don't know how that guy moved into my house, my flat, because I'm very adamant about having a man living with me outside of marriage, because the religious way I was brought up is a Roman Catholic.
Yes.
And that's such a strict way, you know, you can't have children outside of marriage, you can't, you know. So it was something I had in me, that instilled in me. So that, again, I didn't quite understand how this man came into my life and started like a, I called it like a remote control, controlling me. But I was not very well. I was very vulnerable. And I think there too, I was looking for someone to lean on,
yeah.
Someone to help me on that path of, you know, my life, because I've always been with myself, always making my own decisions and things. And even as a young child, had no one to turn to share my emotions and things like that. So someone coming to this part of my life to help me, and then my son is there, that's what I needed. Mm-hmm. So he said all the right words to hook me in.
It's somebody that you needed. It sounded like he just came into your life at the right time.
Exactly. Very, very nice, very charming. And one thing I have to, you know, sort of check my brains. How did he come into my house? I can't remember that. I got an engagement ring on my finger.
Oh, so it must have moved quite fast.
Something went quite quickly there. And also, I got pregnant. That's another thing, too, I had to question myself. Because, again, as I just mentioned, we don't, you know, from that religious background that I had, we don't get pregnant outside of marriage. When I tell people this, they say, Margaret, he may have done something to you, drug you or whatever. I don't know. Eventually, what happened, my dear Sonia, I end up in Africa with this man.
In Africa?
That's right.
Well, was he from Africa? Or
that's right. He was originally from Nigeria. But before that, let me just refer back. He also enticed me to sell my property in London. Got into my mind. There's lots of stories like this. I've done my research. I'm not the only one.
Yeah,
how sometimes someone can come into your life and just manipulate your mind. So something like that occurred. And the next painful one, I'll have to put my hands to my heart, because it was a very pain. It's how my son went to the father, how I allowed my son to go to his father. It was one Sunday, because my son used to go and visit the father every other week. You know, for the weekend. One Sunday, my son was coming back home, as he usually do, and this guy is in my house. And I saw my son coming, and he restrained me from opening the door to allow my son in, saying, well, the father is better to look after the son. I remember.
So he is saying this to you about your son.
That's right.
That he couldn't, he wasn't allowing him in his own home.
And yes, that's it, yes. But you see, I mean, it has been a very painful for me to say that. But now, because I'm talking about it, it's healing. I understand why. When I look back, I say, you know, there is a reason why that happened. Because I was going downhill. I was really going downhill. And sometimes we have to be very truthful and honest with ourselves when certain things like that. Because when I say I thought perhaps I could have done murder-suicide with my son, because I have no family there, and I'm ill, I'm depressed, I'm going in all these traumatic things, and sometimes a lot of people, when they go to that edge, they want to switch that pain out, they want that thing to just disappear, and this is what they turn to, you're not doing it intentionally, but just that pain, murder, suicide. I've done so much research, I've read
and
things.
And you didn't protest at this stage to this man, saying, well, he's my son,
no,
this is her.
I can't remember exactly what happened afterwards. All I remember afterwards, my house went on sale, property, and then I end up in Nigeria, Africa. That's
wow.
Where.
Wow.
That's how
so
I know.
So literally, you're in Nigeria.
That's right.
With anybody else that you know?
Nobody.
Or
nobody else but this guy.
Friends?
No, no one. I think the bait, what made me go there is because he had a ready-made family. And because I never really had a family. And a ready-made family meaning there was someone there, you know, his family was there, like to support the way he was talking about his family. And I never had that. So I think that could have been the bait, you know, and especially when you're in a bit of a depressed sort of stage, you're not, your mind is not working, you're sort of like, you don't know which direction you're going, but you're hearing certain things that pulls you. A lot of us go through these sort of things.
Yeah.
We're not who we are, we don't know where we're going, but we're just flowing with
so
whatever.
So did he have some sort of hold over you, or, you know, maybe not a physical hold, but was there an emotional hold that he had over you?
Very much so. That is what that a lot of us women, we go through that. Well, men and women, we go through this sort of emotional manipulation, this sort of way. Because I remember him several times saying, oh, you will never, you know, yes, you're beautiful, but you wouldn't always be beautiful because, you know, as you get old, no man would like you. You know, they throw all these sort of things, negative things about you. I'm the only one who loves you. I'll always be there for you and all this sort of thing. There's a lot of things, you know.
It's a complete sort of gaslighting.
That's right. So, so even eventually, I'm over this in this country, and what happened one day, which as I'm talking to you, my dear Sonia, I remember it so clear. He went away a couple of times. I was there in, I ended up in Enugu, a place called Enugu. That's where his hometown is, and I met his family and things like that. So he's gone away doing something else, and I don't know where he is. He may have had another family, a wife or whatever. Oh, I have no idea up to date. But one day I do remember, and this is the part I think really can rock the boat. He came into this, I don't know, sort of a wooden thatched house. I can't remember very clearly because my mind was in such a state. And I was about 30 weeks pregnant.
Yes.
Right?
Said, yes.
Yeah. And he came in and I just looked at him and I said, you know something? I think I know why you came into my life. For my dual nationality, because I'm British and I'm English. American and British. And also for my money, because I was quite a well-off person, having my own property and things like that. And when I spoke like that, Sonia, he smacked me in my face. All right? Wow. Well, you know, I think when I look back now, that smack may have woken me up. Because when he did that, a lot of women, a lot of people will shriek and shiver and not do it. I stood up tall. I looked him in the eye so straight. Didn't wink, didn't blink. And so elegantly, like a, you know, I just turned my cheeks. I said, smack the other one.
You said smack the other one?
That's what I did.
You not frightened?
No. No fear.
Presumably this guy, was he taller than you? I mean,
I think about the same height, about the same height. But you see why I did that when I turned and he didn't smack me. And I smacked him back. I make this very humorous. I said people didn't, perhaps he didn't realize I was related to Muhammad Ali because, you know, how I can come back and hit someone so hard.
Good for you.
Yes.
I mean, absolutely good for you. You stood up for yourself, but you're in this sort of, you're in the middle of Africa, in this village with nobody around you. I mean, to hit somebody back, surely you were scared for your own life or the repercussions of that?
It was a natural reaction. It was like I call it a retribution. Seen as a child, how many times I've seen my father hit my mom and how many times I tried to defend my mom. So I think by him hitting me like that, it was like I was hitting my father. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. Well, yes, absolutely makes sense.
That's what happened there. So when I smacked him back, he was shocked because very rarely a woman will retaliate like that, will hit a man, you know. Usually we fear and we scream or we cry, we go in a little corner, but no, I stood up. And when I did that to him, he said, oh, you think you're a man? Because they think only men can hit a woman. And I remember him doing, you see, men are very weak when they hit a woman. Because he walked away shaking, his back was towards me, and he said, if you weren't pregnant, I'll kill you.
If you weren't pregnant,
I'll kill you. So again now, that's like giving me a bit of an ignite. I looked at him. I said, I'm very calm. You see the way I'm speaking now?
Yes.
My voice wasn't high. My voice was just calm. And I remember it. I said, well, if you want to kill me, but before you kill me, let me just point out a few things for you. The child I'm carrying in my womb right now is feeling all that pain, all that emotions. And I want to stress this very much too, Sonia. A lot of women, when we are pregnant and carrying in, a lot of men, I don't know, they tend to abuse the woman during pregnancy. I've done research. I know what I'm talking about.
And it affects the unborn child.
Exactly.
Absolutely. No,
that's exactly what I want
completely to
point out. It affects the child in the mother's womb. So if they think, you know, that it doesn't, that the child doesn't feel it, it does. And those are something that it's very, very important to highlight. A child does feel it because the umbilical cord is tied there and it's feeling all the emotion. But anyhow, once I said that, I did hit him a couple of times again when he, you know, and then he said to me, he said, oh, by midnight, I have to apologize to him.
So he's given you an ultimatum.
That's right.
At this stage.
Because, you know, he's a weak man. A woman never hit him before, and he was shocked.
He probably doesn't know what's hit him.
Yes. So anyhow, what happened there, and remember, I'm in Enugu, a place I have no idea where I am. I don't know what's happening outside or whatever. I don't speak their language. All I remember, after that incident, I went back into the, it's a bathroom, I think, when he smacked me in my face, and there was a mirror there. And these are the words, I looked at myself in the mirror and I saw the tears coming down my face. And I just, like I spoke to myself, I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, Margaret, you've made a mistake coming here. You cannot blame anyone, not your childhood, not your parents. And I said, Father, Supreme Being, please get me out of this situation because I want to see my son. I want to be with my son. Please help me. And I will be at service for the rest. I'll be service to you for the rest of my life. Those are the words I said. Don't ask me where it came. It just automatically came out of me. I was being very honest. And all I remember is walking back, going and laying my body down on some bed. I can't remember, you know, because I was not very well.
No, and you're pregnant as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I stayed there. Of course I contemplated suicide. If there was a bridge or some tall building, you wouldn't see me here today. Because you see, most of us, when we go through something like that, so traumatic, it's not that we want to end our life, it's the pain you want to end.
Yes, no.
Okay. It's the pain you want to stand, the emotion. I didn't want to really kill myself permanently. I wanted the pain to stop. I wanted to switch all that trauma, all that was happening to me from my childhood to my adulthood. I didn't want to be there anymore. I mean, I don't know if you read Tina Turner's book, My True Love Story. She's been through, you know, something sort of similar how with Ike.
And I'm how sure she, a lot of women as well that yeah, have been in these domestic yes, abusive relationships.
That's right. And she tried to kill herself too, Tina Turner, because it's, you know, it's something that, you know, it's so painful.
So what did you do? I mean, well, how did you get out of the situation?
Well, I just lay down there and accept the situation. He came back and he, you know, he kicked me and punched me. But this time, guess what? I did not retaliate because I felt something really deep. I would have killed him or he would have killed me. I did. I know I would have killed that man if I had, you know.
So you're lying there pregnant and this. Yeah. Monster is kicking and punching
you. He did it, right? He did it. Eventually, 3 days later, I end up in hospital. They say I had malaria. When I end up in the hospital, that was my escape. When I look back now, I said that was my escape. 3 days later, after the incident, I end up in a hospital in Enugu. Okay, and I am about 30 weeks pregnant or 31 now. It's, you know, it's all because there's no one there to tell me, yes, you know, I am just there. And I remember having an emergency cesarean. They had to do an emergency cesarean on me. And during that time, I think I mentioned to you at one point, I had a near-death experience. I'm sure you've heard about that, you know.
Yeah, you mentioned this.
The body, you know, you can see your body as you're surfing out of, you know, out of a body experience. Some people call it like
yes,
that.
Yeah.
I saw myself going through this tunnel, misty, dark. First, I had fear, confusion, didn't know what was happening. But all of a sudden, I saw a bright, shimmering light. And then I remember seeing a shadow. Some people may say it's God, I don't know. I just saw a shadow. And what I remember, it's saying, like, Margaret, it's not your time yet. There is so much you have to do when you get back to Earth. But I felt something so wonderful that enhanced my whole body, enhanced my own soul. As I'm talking to you now, Sonia, I am feeling it. And look at the smile that it is gracing my face.
Completely.
There was a feeling of peace. There's a feeling of wellness. There's a feeling of bliss. When I explained this, I was interviewed a couple of times about this procedure, about the near-death experience. And what I remember most, you see, the things I'm doing today, I've written a book, I've been on platforms, I saw myself doing these things.
So this near-death experience, you were meant to come back.
Exactly.
It was for a reason. You were That's meant right. to come back to help others.
Yes, so after that near-death experience, having the child, the cesarean, the child died 7 days later from,
oh,
yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes. Well, it's something too, I think, when I look back, there's a reason why. Because having a child with a father like that, there is no way I wanted that that to happen. But anyhow, after that, they infected from the cesarean. They infected my intestines and things like that, my womb and so I was dying myself. But by some enforce, I have no idea how this happened. The doctor who did the cesarean managed to contact my family in America, and this is how the American embassy, like some security guards, came to the hospital and got me out. I remember going to Lagos in the American embassy. The guy was there. He came there like he was my husband and how much he loved me, etc., and he wants to build a life with me. But there was a reason why I was not myself, because again, if I was myself, I wouldn't be here today. So he couldn't come over with me. I ended up coming back to this to London, because this is a place, if I'm to die and my son is here, I want to die close to my son.
So you were literally dying at this
stage. Yes, I was. They had to put me on the plane and emergency, over here, straight from the airport to the hospital. Yeah, I remember it's Thomas Hospital guys.
Yes.
That's where I ended up. And they had to sort out my intestines because it was infected by the cesarean in Enugu, Africa, Nigeria rather. So they had to sort that out. But during the examination, they found a kidney cancer tumor. They call it sarcoma tumor. It was large enough, 11 centimeters big, just about to touch my spleen and liver.
Margaret, I can't believe it. So not only do you get over this domestic abuse, you're pregnant, you've lost your child, you go through a near-death experience, you're shipped here to London so they can sort your infections out, and they find cancer?
Yes, they did. And just to roll back a bit, when I came into the hospital, they have to pump 9 units of blood into me, a blood transfusion I need. Because I was, so I remember 9 units of blood was pumping to me to save my life before they can do anything. And as I said, so they found the cancer, but they could not operate with the cancer, the tumor, as soon, because they had to, mend all the other ailments in my body. And my dear Sonia, I had no home, no family support. I end up in a hostel. I stayed about 2 months in the hospital, with all these endowments. Oh my God. Sometimes I wish I had a picture. If you see, I'd lost weight. Everything was up. I looked like a skeleton. I was so close to death, I'm sure. I said something, I wish I had a photo just to show people how close to death I was, but look at me right now.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, so I end up in a hostel, and for quite some time, I really can't remember very much then, because as I said, no family there, no one to say anything. I was just like going on with life in a way. I had medication, I remember going to counseling and all this sort of thing, but it's just something I didn't...
Like a blur?
Yeah, it is a blur. There is no way I can really pinpoint exactly. I mean, yes, I went and I look at the doctor notes when I was writing my book, etc. But, they speak a different language. You have to actually speak to a doctor.
Absolutely. But did they, and a cancer? Were you going through chemo or?
What eventually happened, I think 4 or 5 months later, I went back after leaving the hospital, living in the hostel, I went back to have the kidney removed because they couldn't do anything. So I have one kidney now.
One kidney.
And I've survived.
Absolutely. Well, survived a lot of adversity, adversity.
That's right. But what happened eventually, I'm building my life, trying to get my life back in order. Yes, I started seeing my son, which I was really happy, he was there with the father, etc. And I started trying to build my life. And then I met another Prince Charming. I did get married for the second time. Very nice gentleman. But guess what? Alcohol came in display. Just alcoholic like my father. The guy from Africa is a bit religious like my father, was very religious
like
my
father. So you're attracting your father back keep attracting because you haven't healed the old wounds.
You are hitting it on the head.
They'll keep on haunting us until we've healed them.
That's exactly what I want to share and really emphasize. We have to really go to the core, to really get to the root cause of why we attract so many relationships very similar. And why, too, our body gets ill. It's because there are certain things we have not dealt with. And that's a very important issue. So I'm building my life with my second husband. Very nice, charming. But eventually, the true self surface. Alcohol and abuse come into action. I didn't stick around very long. He tried to commit suicide emotional blackmail. Emotional blackmail. He did try to kill himself to keep me there. But no, you're a grown man. Go ahead and take your life, I say, you know.
Well, after everything that you've been through, I'm sure you said that to him.
I did say to him. But anyhow, that's so. I left that and building myself. What really helped me, Sonia, is really getting to know Margaret. I started really going to meditation, really trying to find out, why is my body having all this ailment?
Because I do believe there's a massive mind-body connection.
Very much so.
And if there's something, you know, if you haven't healed from past wounds and there's still things going on in your mind, it can have a huge effect on the body.
You're hitting it on the head. And before that, I did had meningitis B. I caught that, and by having meningitis B, they found a brain tumor. Because remember that I had a brain tumor also.
So when was this?
The meningitis B happened when I was married to my second husband, and the brain tumor then happened the same, you know. So it's after the meningitis, they found the brain tumor because, you know, meningitis do with the head.
So this is just a few years on from your losing your kidney, losing your baby. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes. But you see something, look what has happened.
What a survivor, Margaret. Can I really say that? And you know, I that's what I felt when I first met you.
Thank you.
I almost didn't, you know, couldn't believe what had gone on and what you were going through.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you've survived for a reason.
Very much so. I can feel the passion and the determination and the mission.
And what is that reason?
From all what I have been through, do you know, I have no regrets, although I would not like to go through them again. Because what I've really found is my purpose in life and who I am. That is what I really had to go deep within to really pluck out all those negative weeds that has been sown by others and plant the positive seeds of life. And this is where I am. And now I've been on platforms where I've shared my story. I've created workshops on my experience. You know, I just find life so wonderful, and I'm sure life find me wonderful too.
It's just amazing to hear after everything that you've been through that you are not sitting there being the victim, that you're actually saying that life is wonderful.
Yes, because you see, there's a major thing. I choose not to be a victim of my past. My wounds will always be there. You see, the past is just a history. The past is a memory. So if I keep on living in that past, do you think I'll be who I am today? No.
So what would you say to women out there that are going through domestic abuse, domestic violence, maybe in a similar situation to where you were emotionally all those years ago when you were being emotionally and physically abused?
There's one thing that I would say to them. Flip the mirror on yourself. Have that self-love. Have that self-respect, self-care. You know, because I know we were taught a different way to always care for people, care for that, care for that. I mean, look, when you're flying on a plane and it's about to crash, put oxygen mask on yourself.
Very true.
It's not a selfish, it's not a selfish or egotistical way. How am I to help others if I do not help myself? How? So this is what I think should be taught in schools, should be taught at a very young age, because that's the reality of life. So it's to flip that mirror on yourself and have the most important relationship is with yourself. Because when you love, you respect, you have compassion, tolerance for yourself, you can share it with others. Simple as that. I mean, here we have this lovely mug. Yeah, it's filled with water. I can share it with you, Sonia. If it's empty, to hoots, I can't share it with you. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And that's how I look at life. So what Margaret has done and Margaret is doing is filling myself up with so much values of life, so much love, so much trust. I am Margaret's own best friend. And you see, it all boils down to choices. I look at life as a multi-choice task. Everything we do, I know people who are in abusive relationships usually say, oh, it's because of my child, it's because of this. But you know, we do have a choice. I know it can be painful, it can be hard, but we have to be truthful to ourselves and say, you know something? I don't want to keep on living my life where it's getting bitter and bitter. I want to keep on living my life where it's getting better and better.
You're a true inspiration. Tell the audience, where can they find out more about you?
Well, yes, I have a website, Margaret Aberdeen, www.margaretaberdeen.com.
Yes, and you've written a book. Yes, I have written a book.
It's called Priceless Rose of a Mother.
Okay.
And this came from a poem when I was very, you know, when I was very ill, recovering from the cancer and all the traumatic things in my life. I wrote a poem about being a mother because I was unable to be physically there with my son, who I love very much. And I was even feeling guilty being ill and not being present in my son's life. You know, I'm ill, but he was with the father. So I wrote this poem to just release the feeling of what I felt. It was published in an anthology. And then I was a guest speaker in Rome a few years ago, a big international conference where it was all to do with women from all corners of the world. And I was the guest speaker on domestic violence. And when they heard my story, just as I'm sharing it with you, standing ovation, I received an award. And then an aha thought popped into my mind because it was all women from all walks of life. Aha! I'm going to turn that poem into a book.
So, Margaret, what does the future hold for you?
What does the future hold? Do you know, Sonia, I mean, I really live now in the present. I don't go too far in the future. Because when you taste what I've tasted or been through what you've been through, you know, it's just right now. It's the most precious time in my life. But I see there are certain steps that are, you know, more to be a global speaker. I mean, I have to be in different countries where I have shared my story and I've been on television, radio and things like that. But I see myself, too, really creating like workshops and things like that, which I have done, but getting it more out there. I mean, as a matter of fact, I have created a sort of a training program called Break Free of Domestic Violence Forever,
okay,
using the 4 C's process, which is courage, choices, commitment, change, because I was the guinea pig.
Yes.
So you see now, I've got something where I am able to help a lot of people. But at the moment, I'm looking for funding. I guess what? I even wrote Tina Turner and asked her to help me fund for this
well,
program.
Well, Tina, if you're watching, Margaret's a true inspiration.
I wrote Tina Turner after I read her book. So she has a letter there. I'm sure hopefully in the next few weeks. It's almost three months I've written her, you know. So hopefully I keep that open.
Finally, my question that I ask all my guests, if you were to write a message in a bottle that was to be found for future generations to help them in, say, 50 years' time, what would that message be?
Oh, that is something so simple. Be your own best friend.
I like it.
Yes, this is it. Be your own best friend.
Margaret, it's been a complete pleasure, absolute pleasure, having you as a guest on my show. Thank you.